I wonder if there's anything more explicit, anything more clear, anything more beyond doubt, and or maybe even anything more important in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms than Yahweh's name, that he has but one name, and that his name is important. Kirk, if I were to press you for ranking by importance that which is contained in the Torah, could you find anything more important than Yahweh's name?
Well, for so many reasons, but no, that's absolutely, that was my hot point. Just knowing his name, that started my journey to the covenant.
Yeah. And it, does he state his name infrequently?
7,000 times.
Oh,
3,500 times, I think, around approximately 35 or more hundred times his name is associated with his children's name. He says, shout it from the rooftops.
Yeah.
My children know my name.
Yeah.
They delight in my name.
Yep.
Let's see, he wrote a tablet in stone with his own hand.
Yeah, well, didn't the first and the third statement that Yahweh wrote in etched in stone with his own hand, didn't the first one introduce himself by God and said that you, if you have an association with a God by any other name, you're not going to exist.
You ain't one of mine.
You're going to, yeah, and you're going to cease. You will cease to exist.
Sure. Yes.
So you've got that for starters, and then what did he say in the third statement that he etched it to? What is something like, if you negate my name, if you
name,
in any capacity, which would be changing it to Allah, for example,
that is
unforgivable.
Uh huh.
Isn't there only one unforgivable sin in the entirety of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms?
Yeah, you can't come back from that. If you stay there, you can't come back.
So that's the single unforgivable sin in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, making his name for naught, negating the importance of his name. And it's the very thing that Yale School of Theology said is absolutely appropriate and correct to change his name to Allah.
So if they know these things, they obviously don't believe they're true. So why would you listen to somebody who doesn't even believe their own press?
Why would you claim to be a Christian, to be someone who has embraced the representation? Because they say he is the part of the Trinity. You know, he's related to or the totality of the God who inspired the Torah, prophets, and Psalms.
Right.
And that God said explicitly, etched it in stone, that it is an absolute, unforgivable sin to make my name for naught, which is precisely what these theologians have done.
And they do it to his son's name or his representative, his diminished.
Yeah. But why pretend to be a Christian theologian when you are willing to negate these very things?
Well, where do you draw the line? I mean, if you are one, at what point do you say, what do I stand for?
Yeah. Do I stand for anything other than do I stand for lies?
Make a check. Get a check.
Yeah, do I stand for, since I'm in a politically correct institution, do I stand for promoting lies? Do I stand for indoctrinating and deceiving people? Is that what I stand for?
Mm. Well, that was the little epiphany I got last time we talked. I mean, it was on Galatians 2:5. This is so obviously
wrong.
Wrong.
Right.
That you have to embrace the line. You have to know you're embracing it when you embrace it. Now, most of us are just tugged along by the toe, you know, the undertow, I mean, because we get swept up in it. But these are the people that know.
Oh, there is a 0% chance that a theologian working at Yale University doesn't know that the first statement that God etched in stone is, and I quote, I am, which is Hayah, Yahweh, your Elohim, your God, who delivered you from the crucible of Egypt, out of the house of bondage and slavery. That, you know, do you think that there's any one of those who doesn't know that Yahweh used his name there? That doesn't know that it wasn't Allah?
If they did know, they got every lexicon and all, you look it up and that, and it says, and it'll say Lord, but then it'll say in parentheses, YHWH.
Right.
So, I mean, you can't.
I am Yahweh, your God. I'm not Allah, your God.
No.
I am Yahweh,
your God.
Right. I'm not Jesus, your God.
I ain't Buddha, your God.
No. I ain't Yale, your God. I ain't political correctness, your God.
Mm.
So, the position of the theologian is wholly and completely errant. It's like the meeting that I had with Jerry Falwell so many years ago, where I went and said, why don't we just start with God has a name, and his name's not Jesus. God has a name, and it's not Christ. God has a name, and it's not God. God has a name, and he only has one name, and yet every Christian translation, we'll put that in quotes, has replaced his name with a title that he ascribes to Satan. Why would anybody lift up a Christian Bible and claim that it's the inerrant word of God, as you do, Mr. Falwell, when they have changed God's name 7,000 times? It's Yahweh. And it is an unforgivable sin to do what you're doing. That's the third statement. It doesn't say, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. It's not what it says. You shall not negate the name of Yahweh, your God. For those who negate, who make for naught the name of Yahweh, your God shall not be forgiven. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so obvious. So, you know, you were saying, how can there only be several thousand people on the planet that may know this? And how can the truth be that narrow a path? Well, didn't Yahusha say that the truth would be narrow and the lies that lead to destruction would be popular?
Oh, yeah. It's just in an age where information is so readily available. I know we're dumbing down, and I know we're not the dumbest people that ever came on the planet from an intellectual standpoint. We know how to read. We're not illiterate.
Right.
Anybody can pick up a book and start reading and at least start to question it and find out and can decide these matters.
Right.
So we really have no excuse.
No, and you know, there's a reason that the path to destruction and death is broad and that it's popular. It's because those who engage in religion, the leaders of religions, like Yale University, like the late Jerry Falwell, deliberately, knowingly, lie on what has to be the most crucial issue that exists in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. They are wholly and knowingly deceptive. That's why so many people are misled. That's why the person said, well, you know, how can this be true if so few people know it? Because those who engage in religion deliberately lie. That's why.
Well, there's been a disturbing thing to me over the last, say, seven-ish years or more. And, I get people interested, perhaps, and they read a little bit, or they even listen to the radio, and they won't, and they start asking a lot of questions, and then I keep, most of the time, after I try to answer them as best I can, I say, look, so much of this research is done for you.
Right.
Read.
Right.
And then let's talk about it. You know, because you question, if you just read another paragraph, you'll get closer to the answer you're looking for. I mean, I can tell you.
Right.
But search this out. God's worth pursuing.
Right. As a matter of fact, almost every time I experience the same thing, somebody will say, you know, what's the answer to this? And they'll have like five or six different questions. And what I've learned is that if I attempt to answer the question, they won't process the answer. They'll simply go on to another question. And so it just does you no good. And then I also learned that if I try to simplify the answer, if I give them a quick answer to a question, I'm doing them a tremendous disservice. Because, A, the voyage of discovery, the real joy in the whole process is in the discovery itself.
Yeah.
It's doing what you've been doing that brings great satisfaction and joy. But beyond that, it's one thing for you or I to summarize what Yahweh said. It's another thing for somebody to consider it directly from him.
Absolutely.
And the difference is that they may write you off and say, you know, you're an artist. What do you know? They might write me off. You're a businessman. What do you know?
Mm-hmm.
But if they're reading it directly from Yahweh, and they see the Hebrew there and the Hebrew translated and the Hebrew presented where they can verify it, then the individual that they're trying to dismiss, the statements they're trying to negate, the name they wish to ignore is right there in their face, and it is from God.
Yeah.
You know, what chance do you have of negating what God said and being right?
And if the messenger is a big deal, remember there was Yahweh chose shepherds and fishermen. I mean, and tax collectors.
Right.
What quality? They ain't Yale graduates with PhDs
no,
in theology.
No. In fact, I'm quite certain that there wasn't a single person amongst the prophets or the disciples who had a theological degree.
No.
So why is it that men think that men with a theological degree are somehow qualified to speak for God when God never chose one of them and chose very simple, common, working individuals?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that tell you everything you need to know about who you ought to trust?
I should tell you it ain't the messenger, it's the message.
It's the message.
Go read the message. Go read
right.
The scroll.
Right. It boils down to this realization. There is but one God. God has but one name. If you do not know his name, you do not know him. That does not mean that you know him if you know his name. Satan knows his name.
But you've been introduced.
But doesn't have a relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
But the 100% of those who are part of Yahweh's covenant family, who know the terms and conditions of the covenant, know and love Yah's name. So, Kirk, I don't think it's any wonder that Yahusha said in the second, we've talked about the first statement in the Essence Stone, I am Yahweh, your God.
Right.
I am Yahweh, your God. And he concludes that first statement by stating that you will cease to exist with any God other than me.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the third, he says that the negation of my name, the belittlement of my name, is an unforgivable sin. And he specifically says, my name, Yahweh. It's an unforgivable sin. So in between the two, he has the second instruction that he etched in stone. And it says that his mercy will be available to thousands of those who observe the terms and conditions of my covenant. Thousands of amongst billions. Yeah, thousands of amongst billions is one in a million, isn't it?
Yeah, that's frighteningly accurate.
Yeah. So when somebody responds to you and say, you know, I can't believe this is true because too many people, there's too few people that know it. Well, isn't that exactly what God said would be the case?
Yeah. Well, the hard part is then when the next thing is, I say, well, they say, well, what Bible can I go to? And I say, number one, there aren't that's a pagan term, but regardless, there's nothing that's accurate. And
mm-hmm.
I want to, and this is a little shout out just because it just struck me. This Jackie and Frank, you know, put together the 119th Psalm with all that stuff. I've
really
seen that 4-page document, but.
Uh-huh.
The thing that we studied and all the notes I have on that from the other program was just brilliant. But when they put it all together like that, it answered a question. I'm going to show it to somebody because the question they have is that, well, how could all these people be wrong? And I said, well, here's the real thing. from the oldest documents in the world, and here's what it is, and here's all these five other things, and I'm sorry, this is the truth. I mean, so what happens is they say, okay, that's fine, but you're sending me to this place to read all this stuff, and it's thousands of pages. And I said, yeah, well, God has a lot to say.
Yeah. I thought you said you were interested in what God had to say.
I thought you wanted to know it. I mean, that's, I'm telling you every detail. I mean, God's always saying, well, what did he say?
Your interest is knowing what God said, and your complaint is that there's too much.
Too much for him? Yeah, he said too much.
Too much. You know, so I would only be interested in what God had to say if he could slim it down to a soundbite. Give me a soundbite. That's all I'm really interested in.
So, I'm sorry. So, if nothing else, go and read all the heavy bold print. You can, and just, and then you can look up all the words that are also in parentheses. So, you have, and I, here's the lexicon to use it, and you can look in three more.
Okay. That but, of course, that will, that'll take you a lot more time to
that'll
come to the same insights of just reading the insights.
So, I mean, what do you want?
Right.
What do you want?
Right, yeah. What do you want? Yeah. What you want is I don't want to be bothered.
Yeah.
I don't want to give up the time. I don't want to really learn. I just want a
insurance policy.
I want a simple answer that gives me my insurance policy for salvation.
Now leave me alone and let me go do my
thing. Oh, and by the way, I don't want to give up my religion.
No, because I'm having way too much fun.
Right. Yeah, so how do I? So what you would say is, well, that's not possible.
Yeah.
That's just not possible. First of all, do you think that if it were possible for us to make an informed decision about whether we wanted to spend eternity with God in His home under His terms and conditions for the stated benefits that He is presenting? That if he could have done that in a way that we could have made a quality, informed decision in 5 pages, do you think he would have done so?
Yeah, but he didn't.
So I don't think he could have done so, because he didn't do so.
No, the only way you can do, you'd have to plant it in your heart, and then you lose your free will.
Right.
In the essence, it would be impossible for you to go the other direction.
There is way too much information to convey. You know, you've got to present. God has to present it as who He is, Creator, author of life. He has to present what he loves, what He wants, what He enjoys. He then has to present. What it is that he's seeking from us in terms of a relationship, and what is required of us if we want to participate in that relationship. And then he's got to enable the process for us to be part of that. And by the time that you now have not only presented it, but shown its benefits and the consequences of ignoring it through a group of people over time, and then proven that you're God and you've authored it through history, past, present, and future, it takes a few words. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. You know,
May I make a comment on that last thing before we went to break?
One
of the reasons Yah has so much to say, it occurs to me, is because Yahweh is, he can't stop talking, but because he can't stop growing. And he is the author of creativity.
Right.
And when we become like him, we will be the same way. It is a constant growth of knowledge and understanding and creativity. And therefore, if you don't like knowing more, this is really the wrong house to walk in.
Correct. Yeah, that really is the bottom line. So it is true that Yahweh decided rightfully that he could not introduce himself, his nature, and his purpose, nor his plan, nor how he was going to facilitate his plan, nor demonstrate through prophecy beyond any doubt that he is, in fact, God, in fewer than the number of pages that he devoted to the cause. So he presents himself to us in what rendered in a normal book form would be about 1,500 pages. Now, so you could say, all right, well, you could present what Yahweh had to say in 1,500 pages. Well, no, you really can't. Because each word that he conveys has multiple meanings, and there's connections that need to be made to understand what he is saying, to transition from knowing to understanding. And there's a discussion on how you go about determining what the word means and what the various tenses and stems and conjugations and moods convey that don't exist in other languages. Yeah, so by the time you've done all of that, rather than 1,500 pages, you're 10 times 1,500 pages to benefit from it. But then you get to your point. Since the entire purpose of eternity is to enjoy learning together, if you want a shortcut, if learning isn't fun for you, if you look at 1,000 pages of learning as a burden as opposed to a source of fulfillment and joy, you'd hate heaven anyway. Why would you want to go? Why would anybody want you there?
Yeah. I mean, it's just a simple little thing, like when you were talking about Allah means to lift yourself up and to puff yourself up and all that. Mm-hmm. And you start with Yahweh's name that starts with a letter that is a hand reaching down to lift you up.
Mm-hmm.
How diverse is the difference there? I mean, you want to lift yourself up, or you want Yahweh to lift you up?
Yeah. I'm quite confident that Yahweh is fully able to lift me up. He promises to do so. He is utterly trustworthy and utterly and completely capable. And he has delineated a specific plan to lift us up. Now, I don't see that plan as being complicated, but there's so much shading to it. There's so many insights associated with it. It's the plan is so robust that there's a lot that needs to be said about it. Give you a great example. Yahweh can say, I'm just going to forgive you. Yahweh can say, I'm just going to make you immortal. But if he is going to be just, and he says, that I don't want to be associated with lies. I don't want to be associated with those who change my name. I don't want to be associated with those who would lead people away from me. And I am perfect, and I don't want to be associated with imperfection. Now, the only way that he can be trustworthy, just, reliable, is to have a specific plan whereby he's able to be consistent with what he has promised, be absolutely just, not be capricious in any way, and resolve these issues for individuals. And so he conceived a plan to do that, where he himself would pay the penalty. But if you don't know how he did it and why he did it and understand that he did this so that you accept the way that he did it, it's not of any value to you. And yet if he doesn't present it, then he's just capricious. Then there is no basis for the relationship. That's why the story is long.
Yeah.
The relationship's simple. He's dad. We're his kids. We inherit all that he has to give. The model is based upon family. It's simple. But to understand the means to it, the terms and conditions of it, the reason for them, why we should not believe human pontificators like these at Yale, like the Christian theologians that signed this document, that's complicated. And so God takes the time to explain it to us.
In tremendous detail. And why wouldn't you want to know all the details?
Exactly. Yeah, why not? I would want to know it. I want to know it. I find all the details. I find the path that he has presented and how he has created a plan where he can be completely just and not the least bit capricious and yet forgive me for things that I have done. Still being true to who he is, to be as marvelous as his analysis of how human institutions mislead. I find that equally stimulating.
Absolutely.
And I find it interesting that he takes the time, like a loving father, to say, if you pay attention to what I have to say and you apply it, the good things are going to happen. And if you reject what I have to say, or worse, you corrupt what I have to say, bad things are going to happen.
Absolutely. And why is it so that it only takes a generation or so before the people who actually got it, like the children of Israel,
right,
and then all of a sudden they run right back to Mizraim, or they run right back to Babylon.
Right.
I mean, it seems such a short period of time. Maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but it just how does it lose its power in a generation?
Yeah, I think it gets right back down to the fact that humans seek power. They seek control. Yeah. And the surest and fastest way to impose control over others is religion. The second is politics. And politics and religion are really go hand in hand. And in most countries, they are one and the same.
Sure.
But the reason that you find a generation going astray so quickly is because there are manipulators who seek power, who seek control, and throughout time, the most effective way, the surest and fastest way to get control over people is to indoctrinate them in a religious mantra and to integrate that religion with the politics so that the whole society is conditioned by it, and where rebelling against it becomes extraordinarily difficult, and it's extraordinarily easy to go with the flow. That's society throughout time.
Are people just predisposed to be religious? I mean, because you can't have a divinity of a king unless there's a religious entity you go worship him. You know, so they have to work in harmony to do this, and it doesn't matter what continent you're on or what century you were in, that's the format that they all use.
Yeah.
Do we just gravitate to religion?
No, I do not think that man is predisposed to religion, but I think that mankind has been conditioned to be religious because throughout time, the consequence to those, at least in the temporal way, who were not religious, who, if you oppose the religions of Rome, they crucify you.
Yeah.
If you oppose the religions of Roman Catholicism, they'd torture you. And so the human cost of the pain associated with opposing religion was extreme.
Oh yeah.
And the other side is that since the God was always associated with religion through that indoctrination, that people who were living hellish lives that were being imposed by the religious and political entities, they were living miserable lives, sought relief from that, some escape. And since there was no escape in this world, they looked to hope in the next world, and the religious that were controlling them gave them that hope. As false as it might have been. So that's the, I think, is the basis of it, is that throughout time, corrupt individuals have made, rejecting, not capitulating, to whatever the prevailing religion was, and it's changed throughout the throughout time, extraordinarily painful. And they, so to get along, to avoid the pain, to avoid the torture, most people simply acquiesce because they don't have enough courage, enough backbone, enough personal gumption, enough personal responsibility to take responsibility for their own soul. I think that's it.
Yeah, it's just, but you have to find somebody to torture people. I mean, it takes a lot to boil somebody in oil, like the English used to do.
You know, it's we didn't have any problem in America finding CIA operatives willing to torture people. The Roman Catholic Church found no problem. You know, Muslims find no problem recruiting people to impose torture. And you know what typically happens is that even young children will torture. You know, we see it all over in the Islamic State. You know, when there is a reward for applying the torture, and there is a grievous, painful punishment for not imposing the torture, most anyone will do it. You know, the test that were done in psychology departments in universities in the 1950s and 1960s, yeah, actually had people come in and apply painful electric shock to individuals. And what they found is that the vast majority of people are willing to do it.
Would do it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The vast majority of people will do it. And if they're given authorization to do it, if they're told there's a justification for doing it, they'll do it. You know, people typically go along to avoid being rejected. And so that's why there are so few. And it gets right back to the same thing. So, no, people aren't predisposed to be religious, but people are most easily controlled by religion. You know, Adolf Hitler knew that when he created Mein Kampf, that with him becoming the supreme being of his crusade, if you will, of his political ambitions, that without a new religion to condition and control people, that he would not be successful. So he created what was called the Volks, or the people's religion, with him as the supreme leader, recognizing that people are easily controlled religiously. Okay, suppose it is difficult for people living in a Islamic country to fathom the realization that Muhammad was demon-possessed, even though he admitted he was. Mm-hmm. To fathom the idea that the Quran is a vicious, immoral pile of lies. The worst book ever written. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult for them to come to that realization because everyone they know is a Muslim. And anyone that chose to question Islam has been brutally killed. But now you look at Europe for a better part of 1,000 years, the exact same conditions would apply.
Oh, yeah. You can't even be on the wrong side of Christianity before they would throw
right.
you.
Yeah, and particularly there's while Paul's letters aren't quite as bad as the Quran, they're almost as bad.
Mm-hmm.
Contradictory, stupid, immoral, repulsive. So you've got a society, though, that just goes along to get along. Now, in today's world, you can assail Christianity if you're an academic and you're in an academic environment based upon the lies of the religion, and you know that's considered okay. But you can't assail Islam and any politically correct institution, which include every university. And you know, if you're born in America, during our lifetime, it would be almost impossible for you to fathom the fact that Christianity was a pile of lies. And it would be because everybody you knew was a Christian. And anybody who took a different point of view, like the McCarthy hearings, would be labeled a communist and prosecuted. Right?
Right.
And if you went to a small town in the Bible Belt of America and publicly announced your animosity to Christianity, you know, good luck getting a job.
Yeah, good luck getting out of town.
Yeah, good luck getting out of town. And so today now, because of political correctness, most people are unthinking agnostics. You know, young people are primarily unthinking agnostics. They haven't got a clue. And they don't even have an ability to process the information that God said in a reasonable or rational way. They've been deprived of reason. And, you know, if you look at religion and politics, patriotism and politics,
yeah,
you know, it's all designed for people to say and believe the same thing and to automatically reject anything that is opposed to it, yeah, or contrary to it. So when you talk to a religious person about what God had to say, they automatically reject you.
Yeah, that's the frightening thing. They just look at you like you're a demon.
Right. Because they can't process the information. You know, it's both of these things cause people to lose their ability to be reasonable. You know, if you look at the bumper stickers on cars and the people that are still bragging about the fact, boasting about the fact that they voted for the Obaminator. And you just say, what part of the last 6 years did you miss?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's religion and politics, patriotism, render its victims dumb and blind. That's the issue, and it's why Yale can, under the credibility of its name, can publish a pile of absolute lies. And this is not a question of, is there some credence to what they're saying? They're saying exactly the opposite of what's true, and it'll be published in major periodicals, and there's not a single person that can process the fact that, deal with the fact that it's all false, or hold Yale accountable.
Yeah, it'll be used throughout all the divinity schools, though.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it has Yale has power in,
yeah,
in divinity stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, one of the things that's really interesting is that if you go all the way back to the promotion of the lie, Adam Weishaupt recognized that the single most important place for him to establish his new religion, which was the religion of the enlightened, which is today known as political correctness, socialist, secular, humanism, was the divinity schools. He says, if we can get academia to make it difficult for people to think rationally, and then can promote our view through seminaries, then we'll end up in absolute control, because there will be no one who will be trusted who will argue against us.
Yeah, well, that's why there's a Rhodes Scholarship.
Yes. It's universal.
Well, we'll get back to the university so we can indoctrinate you to pitch this deal.
Universal.